So the platform stability, quality has all to play the role, but the pinnacle is the trust that you built with the stakeholders and the data consumers. And it's very important because you can lose it very easily.
Arthur, welcome and great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you very much for being here. I'm very excited to talk about the data and the Data Culture podcast.
Arthur, you're with the Urban Sports Club. So maybe not everyone is familiar with your business, but maybe you can give us a rough overview also what data you have.
Yes, absolutely. So Urban Sports Club is an interesting setup. It's a three-sided marketplace. We offer one flexible memberships for our users, and they can work out in different sports locations. So it's not only one particular type of sport, but it could be anything from going to your gym, your yoga, martial arts studio, whatnot. So that gives the flexibility. And the three-sided marketplace, why I mentioned that, because we have from one side the consumers, we call them members, we have the partners who are our studios, who is basically the supply part of the business. And we also have the corporates, and this is the companies that are using Urban Sports Club to offer to the employees for the well-being, generally. So as the benefits. Mm-hmm. So that's our business model. We unify all of those sides together. In terms of the data, it's also quite exciting because if you can imagine, there's a lot of like behavioral data that users are producing as well from interacting with our products. We also collect a lot of information on the behavioral signals. We collect a lot of information from our partners, sort of also giving them insights related to the members and how they interact with their particular product, and the same side corporates as well, right? So how effectively in aggregated form, like employees are using the offer that is given to them. And gives us a lot of really opportunity to work a lot with this data, building predicting models, building the same like things that can help us predict churn or like grow the member base or generally do a lot of personalization to our members.
Can you give us an impression about size? So how big is that company?
Yeah, so we are at the scale up stage so far. I mean, it's around 400 people, like at Urban Sports Club. And we are present in 8 different countries in Europe. Mm-hmm. And I think from in terms of the numbers, what I can mention is we have around 13,000 partners that are part of our network. So it's quite flexible for our members to have a great choice of things they can do.
And out of those 400, how many are involved with data, AI, analytics?
Oh, that's a good point. I think I wish it would be more, of course. I mean, our tech department is not that huge. I mean, there still is some good percentage. I mean, around like 80 people, 85 people, I think. And from the data and AI perspective, there are maybe 20 individuals who work with data on a day-to-day basis. I think they're quite efficient, like in terms of the size and like the output that they produce.
Yeah. And I know you do a lot in AI. Maybe you could give us an overview there as well. Maybe the strategy also, but also the AI initiatives you're running.
Yes. So we've been also talking recently how we can increase more adoption of AI. And I think that's also been the problem for a lot of companies, you know, hitting the wall to move from the POC purgatory towards like what is actually productionalized. And we face the same problem. So we're definitely not alone in this. Mm-hmm. I can say what we tried and what didn't work and what actually worked in the end. So far as we started like doing a lot more innovation hackathons together with the teams of how can we bring some of those topics that can be really innovated on, like an AI included, and that was a really good effort. But I think our challenge was we asked people to innovate every 6 weeks continuously,
okay,
and you can't really force the innovation to be on a continuous basis.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we also tried approaches like the AI governance board and things like assessing every initiative from the AI, every AI initiative from a perspective of the business impact and what kind of effect that would have on the business in the long term. But I realized that we introduced a bit more complexity bureaucratically into this. So what really worked for us is basically integrating this within our existing processes. And this is the objective key result, so which a lot of companies adopt on some half-year basis. We have initiatives that happens every 2 weeks. And all of the AI products, all of the AI initiatives that we plan to go live, they go through validation, business impact, and then assessment of who is building this, who has the clear ownership on the end product, who's going to maintain that, and most importantly, what's the impact of the business in terms of metrics and revenue and whatnot.
Okay. So what maybe had the biggest impact in terms of AI adoption? Yeah? So you mentioned like the hackathons didn't really work if you do them too often.
Yeah.
You mentioned linking to business OKRs, which makes a lot of sense. So maybe what do you think drives adoption the most?
Yes, I think it's an interesting question. And generally, if we open up AI to everyone within an organization, I mean, and you know, without controls, adoption could be 100%. But it could definitely harm, I think, us in the long term. Mm-hmm. So really need to think about this sustainably. From a perspective of the business and the impact that we calculate, I can give examples maybe of two projects. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of companies have challenged how to really measure the impact of AI within the business. What worked for us was automating some of the flows that will take, let's say, a lot of effort from a human standpoint. And let's say we have a project that we are testing right now to optimize a lot of the content from our partner network.
Okay.
As I mentioned, we have 13,000 partners. Not all of the content is uniformed, and we want that to be according to some guidelines. So we use some LLMs and like workflows to validate the content, find the information that is relevant to our members in terms of amenities and what they can expect when they go to a physical studio.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have a team that is doing this part of onboarding for the partners, and it might take them 40 minutes to find this all information online, research the opening hours, input that into text, validate, translate to different languages, and post it within our platform. But what we are testing right now is AI workflows, which also takes human in the loop to validate a lot of this content externally, infuse this with our database information about the partners, and with all of the loops and the system, it takes 7 minutes now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very clear signal for the business. And what used to take 40 minutes, like for a professional now to like 7 minutes of time, is definitely an improvement that you can multiply and really turn into, you know, monetary value. What does it mean from a business in terms of the productivity? So that's the one.
So that's like a little clearly measured productivity gain, just in time. But
yes.
Okay. You mentioned two projects. What's the second one?
Well, the second one is something I'm proud of that the team was able to build is the recommendation engine system. We took a course within our product strategy for personalization. And one thing that we built was the recommendation engine that offers our members like a mix of things that are relevant to their particular workout strategy or generally what they like, but also balances this out in terms of like user sports cost and having business engine on top. So there is also an example not in productivity gain, but we can also measure the impact on the member base.
Yeah.
The challenge is, of course, if you are an established member and you are having your routine, there is less likely for you to be swayed and completely, you know, change your sports routine. If I'm going to this one gym, I'm not going to go to a different one that is maybe 50% or 50 cents cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
But we find that we can impact the users to help them navigate as they register within our offer, and then they're still discovering and building those habits, and it's way easier to show them, you know, what might be relevant for them, what they don't know where to start. So we also have some good impact that we can actually take from those examples, and we can translate it as well in a lot of the business metrics too.
Okay. Do you also have a big topic around getting data ready for AI? It's something you care about or where you have
Absolutely. I think if we are not able to get the data ready, like a lot of our projects could fail. And that was one of the examples that we also try to build our AI agents for analytics.
Mm-hmm.
They did fail because adoption was not that great, but also we had to connect every new data set that would be created with more context on to enable that agent to run proper SQL queries with the context of this data. So, and It is very important, like, to have really clear metadata, clear lineage, validated information to factually plug in AI out of the box. Regardless of AI, I think this still is the objective of a data team and data platform as in general, because you have to run the business. So having this, like, for AI is just like, is a bonus anyway, but this is a core objective of a data team to have data and accurate assets altogether.
That makes a lot of sense. If you recommend people running data teams or involved with that to focus on one topic, what would that be? What has the biggest impact in terms of data? Because you mentioned a lot of things that all have an impact, quality, lineage. What is the one thing that, from your experience, that has that's the most important?
Oh, it's very challenging, I think. I mean, there are like technical things, but there's also institutional things. It's like, and I think, like, as a data leader, talking from a data leadership perspective, is definitely convincing, you know, people that data could be trusted, and we build those trust gradually, right? It is easy to lose this trust overnight, but it's very hard to build this. It takes a lot of time. If your pipelines are not ready before 10 a.m., you know, on like 5 consecutive days, people will stop looking into those dashboards, right? So the platform stability, quality has all to play the role, but the pinnacle is the trust that you built with the stakeholders and the data consumers. And it's very important because you can lose it very easily.
Okay. If I hear right, that contains, let's say, process reliability. Yeah. So being able to provide the data, but also the content, yeah, the quality of the content.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Let's get back to AI. And you mentioned your team, you mentioned some use cases. What were, let's also think a little bit about data culture. What were in your team maybe the biggest shifts and changes you have observed?
Yes, I think data culture is an extremely important topic. I think that really something that cannot be mandated from the top, but it's often something that comes from the bottom up. You can adopt like a data policy or anything that will try to kind of govern, you know, and create that kind of culture. But the only thing you could do, let's say, is the management. I mean, you can only lead by example, you know, to establish a good data culture. At the same time, you have really to rely on a lot of the individuals bottom up who are embodying this culture. And what I mean by that is particularly people who are curious, let's say, to explore new tools, who are curious to ask questions why, right? Who are curious to like validate data, make things better within your systems generally. So that is, to me, is the good example of the great data culture. But it starts with individuals, it starts with teams. It starts with ability for them to learn and using educational budget. And I don't think an amount of trainings can really change that, because the trainings for data culture, whatnot, is something that, you know, new people will come and then you have to do it all over again. And that is a bit of a challenge. Okay. So yeah, it starts from the bottom up, I think.
Okay. But still, you also said leadership is important. And when you meant like leading by example. So how does that go together? You say it's bottom-up, it's important, I agree. You said you cannot mandate it, I also agree.
Yes.
But still, leadership is important. So how can leaders encourage or influence the data culture?
Yes, I think, maybe one example is like I always like to bring like new technology and tooling like to discuss to my team and sort of say, let's have, you know, Friday off meetings, and then we just do a huddle and we bring like new exciting use cases and we try to fix things that did not work, right? And then we use this time exclusively for the focus time. There's no meetings. It's just for like, okay, there's one meeting that we discuss like what we can do better. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, this is like an open discussion. You know, there's a new thing that we can explore, right? What can we apply for our setup? What can we apply for our architecture? And as a leader, I feel this is necessary for me to show this example and then kind of come up with something new that is existing, right?
Yeah.
As a leader, I think my goal is also to encourage individuals and support them, right? So yeah, that's the only thing we can do far.
Very good. You mentioned education. So how do you see the skill sets changing now with AI, agentic AI coming into play?
I see a couple of trends. For sure, a lot of talk is coming about changing or modifying the titles as well a bit. So now we're not talking about the software engineer, we're talking about AI engineer, AI architects, AI product manager, right? Also for the data teams, ultimately, writing code is easier for sure. That is true. At the same time, we need to cultivate like ownership and quality, like within the software engineering as the whole, right? So there's one thing to write AI generated code, but it's important to make sure this is production ready and compliant and security oriented first. Security as a mindset, right? So be able to deploy that. So I think even more so important than now for the, let's say, data engineers, data professionals, to be rigorous and really to account themselves for high quality standards when it comes about the code. That is also a lot of that is AI generated right now, right? So yeah, that is mostly what changes within AI in that space, I think.
Okay. Do you also experience here in the, let's say, in the overall population in your company, the overall employees, that AI also might impact them for some of their jobs?
I think it's a legitimate fear, mm-hmm. Right? If there are also recent news coming from other companies that I'm not going to name here, but in some of US-based companies that are letting people go because of this particular reasons, right? Yeah. And I think, well, in Germany, we have a good also protection from employees. And we need to set this up from the start to mention, right, that like now amount of like any new automated, let's say, workflows or use of AI should be people out of work, right? Like ultimately, we should not expect more out of individuals if we take a subset of their, you know, work duties from AI, I think. And that time should be used for more creative, you know, thinking and expansion and generally improving technology and the stack and architecture, whatever we have it, right? So again, I think everybody have their own concerns and we cannot, of course, you know, fix them with the magic wand. The only thing we can do as leaders is address those fears, address those concerns, and then basically mention, well, I mean, like, you know, we're not gonna do any shortages because purely of the, you know, AI, you know, taking a subset of your work. But as, let's say, an engineer, the data professional, having AI as a companion and working with that, I mean, you have definitely, you know, more competitive advantage now on the markets and generally in a workplace. So I think people should not act out of fear, but they should act out of curiosity and such.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Maybe a look into the future to end this discussion. What changes can you foresee or what interesting projects are you working on? So what will happen, let's say, in the next 12 to 24 months?
For us, I think we're also looking to expand a lot of our offering at Urban Sports Club. And also, as I mentioned, like looking into integrating a lot more partners that will be available for our members. So that also will come with the challenges of the data quality, you know, bigger volumes of data that we need to make sure we have good standards for. And one of the trends that we are looking into, of course, is also building more hyper-personalization for our members. Okay. And from a product perspective, is looking into communities, because we think community is a driver for like good engagement for everybody who wants to do sports. It's way easier to really be productive when you have a peer pressure or community in general. So I think that's something that will help us, and that a lot of data products could also be based on top of some of those like product strategy features, because we really want to see like the world when people lead active and healthy lives. And that's our mission statement.
Yeah, excellent. Very nice. Good luck with for you.
Thank you.
With all these endeavors, and see you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for the talk.